Yes.
Yes. Yes, Cymru Radio.
Yes.
Radio Free Wales.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Radio Yes Cymru podcast, the podcast which is also on YouTube, supporting Welsh independence and Yes Cymru. And we try and take a broader look at Welsh politics and the international movement for independence, especially here in Wales. My guest today is a man I'm very, very much looking forward to speaking to. He's called Joseph Nyagbo. I hope I got that right, Joseph. We'll check that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Joseph is from the Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast in West Africa, now lives in Cardiff, has learnt Welsh, and is now the chair of Cymdeithas yr Iaith Gymraeg, so the Welsh language pressure group for status of the Welsh language, which has been going on since the 1960s. So much to discuss, Joseph. Not too much time, but we're trying to discuss a bit about yourself, a bit about Wales and attitudes towards Wales, and how did you find Wales? And then I'd like to have a chat about the situation, obviously, in Côte d'Ivoire as well, and maybe if there are any similarities between your experience there and here in Wales. So, Joseph, croeso i'r rhaglen.
Yeah,
this is the first time I've spoken English to you, so this is a peculiar situation. We did have a chat a few months ago, something you organised last year. So, Joseph, croeso i'r rhaglen. And just to get the name correct, so you can tell the audience how to pronounce your name.
Okay, yeah. So the name is Nyagbo. So Nya, like in Spanish, I think they have that sound Nya, like Senora.
That's it.
Nyagbo, but Bo is a typical West African sound.
So right. And we're familiar with that in Welsh as well. So welcome to the program. So as I said, we'll get to start about. Who are you? How did you end up in Cardiff, of all places? So you're from the Côte d'Ivoire, so people know it is a former French colony.
Yes.
Some people say it's still too much under the influence of France. In West Africa, so a bit more to the west of Nigeria, maybe British viewers would be more familiar with that kind of geography. So how did you end up in Cardiff there, and Joseph? It was you claimed political asylum here, yeah?
Yes, I left the Ivory Coast. Like you say, I come from the Ivory Coast. In Ivory Coast, I was working in the media. I had some experience in journalism, and then I was also running a language laboratory. But I was also an activist with a big voice, and I even came up with a song. I was a rapper at the same time. Yeah. So I was very vocal, and there was a war in Ivory Coast that lasted 10 years. It started, 8 years, sorry. It started in 2002 and ended in 2011. Okay, let's say nine years. Yeah. But that's the part where you hear the gunshots. But actually, to me, I can see, to me, Ivory Coast is still at war. Even if we don't hear any gunshots. So I left the Ivory Coast because I was supporting the government, and the government was not very submissive towards foreign powers. And, you know, everybody wants independence. They want to develop their country based on their potential and first be free to do that. So the rebellion was backed, was financed and backed by foreign powers.
Right.
And they, of course, since they are backed by foreign powers, they eventually won the war. They came to the capital city where I was living. And then since I was one of the big voices there, I was targeted, and there was a threat on my life. So I had to leave the country.
Yeah. So the insurgency or the maybe attempted coup, was that backed then mostly by France or by who in particular?
Yeah, definitely. It is it's some kind of a territory under French control. Yeah. There's some kind of an agreement between foreign powers. Like you have your area of influence, and then I have this area. You have this area. So France is the strongest grip and the main.
So is there still a French African Economic Union or currency in West Africa?
Yes, exactly. Yes, there are 14 countries. Yeah, and Ivory Coast is one of them. Their currency, our currency, is controlled by France, and There are French representatives in the board of directors of the central bank, and they can veto any decision. And the currency is printed in France. And whenever we want, we have to pay at least deposit 55% of our currency reserve in the French treasury.
Yeah.
And whenever we want to even borrow that money, we need that money, our own money, we have to borrow it, and we have to pay interest for borrowing our money. It can be refused. But the most important thing is that because the money is managed by France, France has access to every single information about economic information about those countries. So whenever you want to sign a contract with a different country, they are aware, whatever business you want to undertake with other countries, they are aware of everything. So economic control, information control, so total control, yes.
So France hasn't really left West Africa, even though the countries normally became independent in the 1960s.
Yeah, no, never left. Actually, they left to stay better, to stay stronger, you know, but they use local people now. But what people forget most of the time is that even during the colonial government, the leaders of the army, the leaders of the government, and the high officers of the army were French people. But the most of the soldiers, most of the troops were Africans.
Yeah,
the colonial government was made of Africans first.
Yeah.
So Africans have been used against their own people, and it has been like that. And it is still today, because today you have a government, we see we have a flag, we have a national anthem, but actually we are not independent.
Yeah, so the substance, well, it's not as weak, it's not as strong as you'd like. And it's classic subaltern situation, isn't it? Where,
yes.
Other people get to do the work. And I presume as well, Joseph, that this is part of the problems or the issues in Mali. Recently, we were seeing the fighting there. And it is quite interesting the way West Africa's, because you have some, we'll go on to languages later on in the podcast, but I mean, you have some big, quite big African languages like Manding and Wolof and stuff, and these people are now saying that, you know, in Mali, that, you know, French wasn't going to be the official language. I presume it still will in most respects, but there is a backlash against the Francophone community there. So I'm guessing then that's the reason you ended up in the UK and not in France.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I first went to Morocco, and I stayed 6 years in Morocco, and from there I had an opportunity to come to the UK. And yeah, that's it. I came to the UK because, there'll be no point for me to go to France, because there I would be silenced and muzzled.
Well, because you would expect that, you know, you would have asylum in France because of Cote d'Ivoire's obviously relationship with France, but now it makes more sense when you didn't go there. So you're the new chair who's been elected for Cymdeithas yr Iaith Gymraeg, the Welsh Language Society, which for people maybe outside Wales is a radical group for status for the Welsh language. So founded in 1962, 63. These are the people who took them down the road signs in 1970s, climbed up TV mass in 1970s, 80s for S4C, the Welsh Fourth Channel. If you look at the film Earth Sŵn, I'll give a link to that on the YouTube too, and done such good work, and often in a direct action, but peaceful way, so no people are being damaged. Sometimes offices are being wrecked, but or road signs, but no people, as a deliberate policy, and obviously fighting for the Welsh language status. So, yeah, you know, it would be a surprise for many people to hear that someone from Cote d'Ivoire is the chairman of Cymdeithas yr Iaith. I'm guessing that not many people in Cote d'Ivoire have heard of Wales at all, and you know, certainly not to the Welsh language. So, you know, you end up claiming asylum, I think it was 2018, was it? You ended up in Cardiff?
Yes, I arrived in 2018 in February, and I was lucky. I was granted asylum in 2018, the same year, in September. Yeah. And then, I arrived in February and I was granted in September.
That's it. And I presume you aren't given a choice of where to settle. You were settled in Cardiff. I mean, apart from the rain and the cold, Joseph, what were your first impressions of Cardiff and Wales when you arrived?
Oh yes. Well, I ask people around before coming to Wales, because I heard that when I heard that I was going to be moved to Wales by the Home Office, I asked people what is it like in Wales, and they said very positive things about Wales. Okay, it's not a very crowded place, and people are very warm and welcoming in Wales. Yeah, that's what I heard. And honestly, I came and I saw very welcoming people. All right.
Well, that's good to hear. So, what are the main differences between Ivory Coast and Wales?
I didn't know about the existence of the Welsh language.
Right.
Yeah, I discovered it. I knew about the beautiful flag with the dragon, the rugby team, but I didn't know about the existence of the Welsh language. And I was also shocked by the weather, because the weather the day I arrived was very sunny, and the next day it was completely snowy everywhere.
So with the language, obviously there's situations which are, well, you can tell me, there seems to be some parallel in terms of diglossia, so people, language power, isn't it? So people in, obviously, situation in Africa, people increasingly speak French or English, and then they will speak their home language, be that Bemba or Wolof or Zulu or whatever.
Yeah.
And to some extent, I'm guessing that's not, signs in one language or two languages and people speaking another language. I'm guessing that's not such an unfamiliar situation for people from Africa, maybe less so than from people from other parts of the world, where you have these different languages and different domains for languages. Would that be true to say?
Yes, exactly. It's the same everywhere in Africa. You take, for example, Kenya, you have people who are maybe from a Kikuyu tribe.
Yeah.
They speak Kikuyu, they will speak Swahili, because everybody speaks Swahili. Yeah. It's an official language. Then they will also speak English. So they have three languages. And people who are not Kikuyu might speak Kikuyu and their own language, plus Swahili, plus English. Yeah, so there are people who speak many languages. This is an example of Kenya, but some countries are not doing very well. For example, Ivory Coast, we tend to speak our mother tongue plus French. Yeah. Or some people were born in town, like me, in the capital city, and with that influence, you know, my father was also a victim of that influence. I would call it a complex of inferiority, alienation, linguistic alienation. He encouraged us to speak French, and then we ended up speaking French. We didn't speak any other language. So 60 languages in Ivory Coast, I don't speak any of them. Yeah. And I left the country. It's only when I was outside Ivory Coast, I realized the importance of speaking African languages. And I learned Swahili, but I hope I will learn other.
Well, that's interesting. So obviously that would ring a bell with many people here in Wales. So where people are familiar with speaking language not passed on, because it's feeling, as you say, inferiority on the language wasn't of the modern age, that people needed a different language to communicate the dominant language, French or English, is language of media and everything. And anyway, that's the experience of your own family then in Ivory Coast, and experience of many people here in Wales, where they've lost the language. Maybe their grandfather spoke Welsh or something, but it wasn't passed on. So that's quite interesting. So I'm guessing, would I be right to say then, Joseph, so when you were right up in Wales, the sort of situation then sort of rang a bell with you, this sort of linguistic situation?
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yes, that was the first reaction I had. Because I remember that what the story we were told is that our languages, local languages, where it was forbidden to speak our languages. So the students and people at school, whenever they speak their mother tongue, they will be humiliated, exactly like the Welsh knots.
Yes.
So I was aware of that. It was already there in my memory when I came here. So when people told me, everybody speaks English here, you don't need to learn the Welsh language, my first reaction was, no, I'm not doing that. Welsh as a language, I'm going to speak that language.
Good man.
Yes, it's a principle for me, first as a linguist, but also show some respect. I mean, show respect to the culture and to the culture of the people who welcome you. I have to speak Welsh language.
Yeah. So I mean, the Welsh experience in a way is a global experience, isn't unique to us. It's happened all over the world. So you decided then to learn Welsh. I mean, I know you speak obviously French, English, and a couple of other European languages and Swahili. So I'm already feeling very insufficient next to Joseph. But I mean, how was it to learn? Because I mean, learning. Well, there's quite a lot of Welsh speakers in Cardiff, but anyone seen that video on YouTube where Ari Smith goes around Cardiff Market and the Riverside Market in Cardiff, and presumably nobody speaks Welsh in Cardiff, but quite a few people do, but the percentage is small. So how was that in terms of trying to learn the language and then just actually speaking it and getting used to it? Was that difficult?
It is well, I think there's a social network. I mean, I would say a good ecosystem of Welsh organizations who provide the promote the Welsh language, the Welsh language and the Welsh speaking community. It's very well organized here, because as soon as I started learning the language, I immediately got in touch with. I was linked up with Cymdeithas Seriaeth, the Welsh Language Society, and other organizations. So I received an opportunity, it's like a scholarship, to go and learn Welsh at the uni from Cymraeg I Oedolion. Welsh for adults. Yeah. And then for free, I was able to learn for free, and I was supported by Cymdeithas Seriaeth. As soon as I finished, I reached level intermediate. I started working with the Welsh Language Society. I had a job there, and I was very active, taking part in meetings. At the same time, I was joining Welsh meetups where I could go and practice. Yeah. So everything was so organized, and then there was so much support here. It really helped me.
That's good to hear. And and we're very glad you've learned Welsh. We'd like more people like you, Joseph, to be learning Welsh. You're an example for many people in Wales. I mean, I mean, that's for me the exciting thing, I think, which is happening in Welsh language now. I mean, Welsh is not just a white language. We have people from different backgrounds bringing in their own experiences, which is exciting to hear into language. It's so, so important for the vitality of the language, just to make the language an attractive one. And I hope that people are feeling welcomed when they do learn the language, and then people who maybe don't speak perfect Welsh to speak Welsh. This is a lesson, use the Welsh you have. It's easier to have to pick up the words later. Yes, so you got involved
positive,
with
yes, attitude is very positive.
There is some kind of trope or the nasty Welsh speakers always correcting you, and sometimes people will, but when I've been to Germany and spoken German, someone's maybe corrected me. I haven't taken the umbrage at it. There's some people are maybe overzealous, but most people aren't.
But they're very supportive.
Yes, and I think that's what I hear from people as well. Obviously, you have the experience, which I don't. So you started working for Cymdeithas. You then are now a Welsh language teacher. So you teach Welsh to other people. I mean, that must be an experience. I mean, I would find that difficult to do. I'm guessing you're following a course book, but I mean, how is that going?
Yes, it's going well. I'm still teaching. I started soon after I started working with the Welsh Language Society. I decided to teach Welsh to asylum seekers and refugees. Because the course I had benefited from had stopped at the Centre Oasis, at the Oasis Centre, sorry. So I went to look for centres or a way to teach refugees and asylum seekers. So it went well, but of course I had to face many challenges because, mentally people need to make an effort and get over certain considerations, some teachers will say, no, it's really confusing for refugees and asylum seekers because they are learning English. Because my strategy was a very aggressive strategy. Right. I decided, since it is difficult to understand to make refugees and asylum seekers understand that it is good to learn the Welsh language, since they don't know when they come, they don't have any information, they don't know about the Welsh language, and nobody tells them this is how you can learn. This is these are the advantages, the opportunities that come with the Welsh language. So they are not really prepared, you know. So when you tell them come and learn Welsh, they're very reluctant. They say no, I have English to learn. So I decided to be very aggressive. What I decided to do was to go where they learn English, because every asylum seeker learns English, even when they come from an English-speaking country. So I decided to go there and then negotiate with the centers, like 30 minutes at the end of the class, the English class, to come and teach Welsh. So that's how I was able to access some of them. But of course, there were challenges, because some teachers would say, no, it's confusing for my students. Yeah. Don't come and teach them Welsh while they learn English. But those students come from a multilingual background.
Yes, that's the point.
Them, yeah. So they can learn many languages. See? So these were some of the challenges that I had to face.
Yes, and I imagine the pronunciation of many of the words would be easier, possibly, for them, people who don't speak multiple languages already.
Yeah, exactly. So many of them speak Arabic, for example. So you have the sound like you already have it. Yes. It's very easy for them to pick up. Yes.
So you started working with Cymdeithas. I mean, I could ask you. I mean, in a way, I can imagine with many asylum seekers, especially, they've come to a new state. They don't to be seen as a troublemaker. They don't to be seen as someone who's causing or any in do anything if which the state can anyway say, okay, step back. And for people who don't know, Cymdeithas members have been to jail since the 1960s in protest for the Welsh language, deliberately getting themselves arrested and making that as a symbolic protest. So I mean, everyone in Wales knows this. So if you're working with Cymdeithas, it's maybe less so now than in the past. So I mean, was it a part of you thinking, okay, I need to be a little bit careful, I don't want to get involved, and I don't think you've been in jail or you committed any sort of direct action for the language, but you know, was that part of you just thinking, okay, I need to be tread carefully here? Because obviously you are in a very sensitive situation, which, you know, I wouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, how can I say, is it the passion? But whenever you talk about justice, if you talk about justice, like linguistic justice, social justice, I am ready to get involved. And I believe in justice, and I believe every group have the right to protect their language. It's a right to me. And just have to respect the law of the country. That's the way I see it, yeah. So, and also, I also receive a lot of encouragement, support from the Welsh land, for the members also. Yeah. So they are there, they are really supportive, and yes.
So in terms of the situation with Welsh and Wales now, Joseph, how does it look to you as an outsider? You know, start maybe with the language, then maybe go on to the political and constitutional lookout. I mean, how does that look to you as someone from outside Wales coming in?
How is it going on? I mean, how is it coming along?
How do you think? I mean, there are obviously the big issues for the Welsh language in terms of, you know, language transfer, you know, the power structure in Wales, you know, and we are next door to the most, well, we're not even next door, you know, we're part of the most powerful language in the world ever, you know, I mean, and the battle then, or the struggle to make sure the language is seen as relevant and useful for people is a big one.
Yeah, well, if we look at figures only, okay, we would say that not enough has been done by the Welsh government, even though the Welsh government showed some will to push for the Welsh to promote the Welsh language. But what I notice is the attitude towards the Welsh language gradually, and this is irreversible. It has started. People are changing, are becoming more receptive and more positive towards the Welsh language. I noticed that with asylum seekers. There are more and more asylum seekers who want to learn the Welsh language. I see more and more people from African background or different other background, not traditional background, who send their children to Welsh schools, less Welsh speaking schools, because I have the chance to work as a substitute teacher in schools, and I see that So I think the general attitude is more and more positive.
Yes.
People start to understand and get over some thoughts, you know, that were there to hinder the way.
Yeah.
For example, when people say, there's no point sending your child to a Welsh school because English is there, people speak English, but then they forget that a child can learn many languages. So if you send your child to a Welsh-speaking school, they will learn Welsh, they'll be able to speak Welsh and English because they live in the UK. So then they gain two, so they are gaining.
Yeah, so and it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, and that doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, yeah. So there's nothing, and it's exactly the same cost or whatever. So, I mean, and I presume that's one of the big differences between Wales and the situation in Africa, where, you know, the Welsh language, despite almost every Welsh school, has been fought for, you know, often for years, there is a Welsh medium education, and that doesn't exist for most African languages, from what I understand. So there's a big, big difference there. I mean, in terms of Wales constitutionally, as I said, you didn't know much about Wales when you came here. I mean, were you aware that we had our own parliament, or maybe there wasn't such a, wasn't obvious either? So, I mean, we obviously have some kind of devolution, some kind of parliament is better than nothing. Yeah. Obviously, we in Yes Cymru would like to have independence. I mean, how does that seem to you? And how do you think maybe people from outside Wales moving into Wales would approach that kind of thing? Would people think an element of trepidation? Maybe thinking, okay, look, you know, I don't want to rock the boat again. You know, I mean, from my experience, many often people are quite conservative when they go to a different country because they don't want to feel they're upset in a boat. They want to keep the head down. But what's your response to that, or how would you think?
Oh, well, yes. I understand that. I give my opinion, and I believe there's a level of democracy here in the UK and in Wales. I trust that level of democracy because I've seen political regimes, different political regimes in Africa, and there's a level of democracy where, I mean, its basic rights are respected, and it's about your freedom of opinion. And I really express that opinion, and I support people who are expressing that opinion.
Yeah.
And there's nothing against the law. That's what I think. Yeah, but to be honest, I didn't know much about the political system here. I discovered about the devolution government, and it really fits me with hope. I mean, to the independence of Wales, cultural independence, because independence is at many levels. Cultural independence, then economic and political. So I think I have good hopes these people will be free and really express the potential. Yeah, that's the vision I have. But I don't think independence means conflicting or a hostile relationship between different entities. Can find a way, you know, to collaborate
I think that's certainly what we in Yes Cymru want, and I think all supporters of independence implied and the Green Party. So I mean, I think we can have independence, we'll be another small European nation working closely with our neighbours, and I think that
An
open border, I think that's what we're looking at. I mean, I think the situation obviously with Ivory Coast and France is a different one, a more brutal one, but I think there is issues there on terms of control environment and control of goods and
from how many kilometers away. Imagine France is in Europe there, and we are in Africa, so everything that they cause in Africa, in the region, we are the ones suffering from it. For example, you take the war in Libya. France decided to intervene in Libya, of course, with the support of the US, and unfortunately of the UK too. And then the destruction of Libya has had that effect of completely creating chaos in the Western African region, about terrorist groups. So many states have almost been dismantled, and so we suffer from it. And then France is there, and they negotiate with North African countries like Morocco, Tunisia, to stop migrants, what they call migrants, from traveling to the European continent.
Yeah.
Whereas they have caused the problem there.
Yeah.
So people are stuck, they cannot travel, and they are, the countries there, like Morocco, they are paid to really deal with those migrants, you see. So, well, this is unacceptable. It is unacceptable.
So, but, I mean, this is, we're running out of time, unfortunately. But obviously, there's an issue there. Well, I think... the gloire, the glory of France is the one thing, supposed glory of France, is one thing which unites every French politician and French president for 200. Well, they all want to be the roi soleil, don't they? They all want to be Louis XIV, essentially, from my point of view.
Yeah.
And their attitude and things towards the Breton language and Basque and Catalan is sort of symptomatic of that kind of arrogance as well. I think that France is a particular problem, especially so in West Africa and the Maghreb.
Yes.
And I'm not too sure how to get around that, because, I mean, for France, I'm guessing the European Union is some kind of a vehicle, a bigger stage for them to get through to many of their policies and under a different banner, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the struggle for the liberation of Africa, of African countries, that has turned into a military struggle. Now it is about military threats. Some presidents who are puppets have been removed by militaries supported by the people. So it's some kind of uprising of the people. And France is using all the instruments like ECOWAS or like some other countries, satellite partner countries, to threaten any countries that decide to free themselves from France. And so it's very tense there. It's very tense. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be like that, because the UK, when it the time of independence came, the UK left Africa. France and some European countries never had any colonies, but it doesn't mean that they are worse off. France doesn't need to be sucking the blood of those countries to maintain their position. They just need to reinvent themselves.
Yes, and that can be done and should be done.
We
only got about 2 minutes left, Joseph, unfortunately. Are you able to go back to Cote d'Ivoire? Is that too dangerous? And, you know, do you think you'd sometime would be able to go back and settle if you wanted?
No. I still can't go back. And especially with the stance that I take everywhere. I'm still being an activist. Yeah. So the regime there is the number one protector of the French interest. So if you criticize France, even in Ivory Coast, you can be arrested. Not criticizing France, you can be arrested in Ivory Coast.
Disgraceful. Joseph Nyabo, thanks a lot for making time to speak to us. We're going to have another interview with you now in Welsh. So as can Shara Kamrag join us there. But it's good to speak to you. It'd be very interesting to see how things are going maybe in a year's time after, because your chairmanship of Cymdeitha has only lasted a year, been elected to the job. You're not paid for it, just so people understand. It's a pressure group. It's not some kind of a government body at all. But it'd be interesting to see, and it certainly is interesting to see your take on how the situation here in Wales is with the language. And I'm glad to see, well, very glad that you've learned language and you have so much passion for it. If only many people in Wales had the same passion as you do, Joseph, you put them to shame. And also to make the point, you know, speaking Welsh isn't some kind of magic, you know, it's just another language, you know, and you don't have to speak it perfectly either. That comes and you will be welcome to the society. I can hopefully guarantee you that. Joseph, until the next time, thanks for all your work for Wales. Thanks for your support for the language, for the broad independence cause. You've spoken at the Yes Cymru events, of course, and at Melin Drafod. And if you go and see melindrafod.cymru, you'll see more stuff with Joseph. Until next time, and if you don't listen to the Son of Welsh Language podcast, I'm sure we'll speak to Joseph again in the future. Popwyl Joseph.
Yeah, it's your.
Yes. Yes. Yes, Cymru Radio.